Well, that's a good question. Actually, this Professor Adichandra, who I mentioned, he happens to be a leading Indonesian environmentalist. In fact, he won a big prize from President Suharto, the general, you know, the guy who runs the place, a couple of years ago for his work on environmental issues. And he is, I guess, although you maybe you know better than I do, I'm sure, but he seems to be the leading, at least academic, spokesperson for Timorese rights, and in fact for civil rights in Indonesia too. He's one of the leading ones, and he is an environmentalist, so these people would certainly know him. I don't know exactly what the right thing to do is about that, but there's anyone who has connections with Indonesia is in a good position to influence what goes on, not by, you know, we hear a lot about how, you know, it's imperialist to attack Indonesia and we can't impose our values on them and so on. That's total baloney, all of that stuff. For one thing, the third world has nothing to learn from us about values. They've learned enough, thank you, for the last 500 years. For another thing, the question is, which Indonesia are you talking about? Which China are you talking about? I mean, when you talk about Indonesia, do you mean General Suharto and his cronies and the family who are ripping off the country? Or do you mean labor leaders who were tossed into jail to clean the place up before Clinton showed up for the APEC meeting, or human rights activists, or people like Adichandra, or, you know, people all over Indonesia who want this oppressive system lifted? Which Indonesia are you talking about? That's the Indonesia you have to ask about. And when Harvard or anyone else says they have relations with Indonesia, you always have to ask which one it is. They're very different, and the same is true everywhere in the world. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's an aspect, but I wouldn't overdo that. I mean, could you hear what you're asking? East Timor has international, you know, it's part of a big complex of things. And one of the elements is the one you mentioned, but I'm not convinced it's a very major one. The fact is that during the 1980s, the Central America Solidarity Movements were disrupted, infiltrated and disrupted by the federal government. I mean, that's part of their job. That's what things like the FBI and so on are for, to disrupt independent politics in the United States. And the question, I guess, was, will that also happen to East Timor activists? It could or it could not, but, you know, this is not an issue for people. It's an issue for people like George Adichandra, but not for us. The amount of harassment that the government can carry out against relatively privileged people with the white, bright color faces and so on is minuscule. I mean, I've been very close to long jail sentence myself, and I know how it works, but they just can't do anything to you. You know, as by comparative standards, we are very, very safe. I mean, there's a little harassment and annoyance, and they try to wreck your office and that sort of thing, but it's very small potatoes as compared with what people face anywhere else. So I honestly don't think that that's a big issue. On the other hand, the East Timor issue is much larger in other connections. The reason why the United States is supporting, and Britain and France and so on, are supporting the United Indonesia is not because they care one or another way about East Timor, but they care a lot about Indonesia. Indonesia is a rich country with tons of resources. You can make a lot of money by plundering Indonesia. Furthermore, Indonesia has very low-paid wages, labor. Indonesian labor is about half the wage level of China. China is not known for being too munificent. That means that it's the existence of very low-paid labor, an awful lot of it, women, in fact, brought in from the farms, you know, and that sort of thing. That's a very good weapon against American workers. In fact, that's part of the international system, whereby the entire working people all over the world, and that means most people, are simply being driven down to third world standards. One of the reasons why U.S. median wages, you know, 50% above and 50% below, why they've been dropping steadily since 1980, right through the Clinton recovery, incidentally, and one reason why household wealth is actually declining in the United States is because of the ability of private tyrannies to either transfer production abroad or to threaten to do so. And for that, it's extremely important to have highly repressed labor. So that's why when Clinton goes to Indonesia, like as he did for the APEC conference, he makes it very clear he's not going to talk about any human rights issues. Not going to talk about the labor leaders who were tossed into jail. See. And all of these things are very intimately connected. So yes, it has a lot to do with attack on civil rights here, but I don't think it's so much, say, FBI efforts to disrupt dissident groups, though they may well occur, as other things of a much more global and significant character, which are really harming like maybe 80% of the whole population significantly, and will harm it more.
The question is it Indonesian army massacred the Chinese ethnic groups in East Timor? In fact, there were 30,000 or maybe 50,000 Chinese were massacred by the Indonesian army. Because East Timor, before Portuguese arrived in East Timor in 15th century, I think, had a very close economic relationship with China and also India. So we have actually Chinese in East Timor and also Indian and also from people from Arabic. Yeah, we have that. But Chinese, there are a lot of Chinese were killed in the first day of the invasion. And now many Chinese who live in East Timor are left to Australia and Portugal. And there are now Chinese from Indonesia, from Surabaya, from Java. They are Javanese, Chinese Javanese. Yeah.
In United States and in Israel, part of the expansion, occupation, acquisition of territories has also been based upon these people are less than we are. You know, the only good Indian is a dead Indian, the only good Palestinian is a dead Palestinian. Is that sort of thing going on in Indonesia in regards to East Timor right now? That's a question for both of you.
Yeah, but, you know, Indonesia has its own history, which Constancia was just talking about. There's a background for this. Indonesia was regarded as the major concern of U.S. policy, literally the major concern for years. In 1948, the State Department, George Kennan, identified Indonesia as the major issue in world affairs for the United States. In 1958, 10 years later, John Foster Dulles, Secretary of State, found three major crisis areas in the world: Indonesia, the Middle East, and North Africa, Algeria. All Islamic countries, notice. And he pointed out in internal discussion the Russians didn't have anything to do with any of them. Eisenhower agreed. There was a big struggle as to who was going to take over Indonesia. It's a central part of the global system that the United States was reconstructing for the rebuilding of industrial capitalism, of Japan, of Germany, of the United States itself, and the whole system of rule over the world that had disintegrated during the Second World War. Indonesia was a primary part of it, and there was a struggle. The problem in Indonesia was there was a big political party. There was one political party, PKI, Communist Party. Even the most conservative Indonesia specialists, like Harold Crouch in Australia, who's one of the leading specialists, very conservative, points out that the PKI was not a revolutionary party. It was a party, as he put it, which defended the interests of the poor. And, of course, that's completely unacceptable. You can't allow a political party that's defending the interests of the poor get anywhere. That's opposed to democracy. The documents have just come out a few months ago, U.S. documents about Indonesia from 1958, late 50s, and they make it very explicit, declassified documents, of what was going on. I mean, the Joint Chiefs and the State Department and so on were calling for overt action if necessary and any other operations that are required to make sure that that there is no democratic election, because they all recognize the PKI is going to win a walk. You know? So it goes until 1965. In October 1965, General Suharto took over. He carried out a huge massacre. He killed, you guess the numbers, but people estimate in the range of 500,000 to 1,000,000 whatever the numbers, the CIA secretly identified it as one of the worst massacres in modern history, comparing it with, Stalin and so on, and one of the big turning points in world history. The PKI was wiped out. The one political party was wiped out, mostly peasants, landless peasants. Huge slaughter. The United States was absolutely euphoric. I mean, it was such a big issue that the euphoria was public, literally public. It's kind of suppressed now, but if you look back at the press that time, it is mind-boggling. If you're interested, I have a review of it in a chapter of a book called Year 501. It came out a couple years ago, just review the whole press. And it is just astounding. And nobody had any doubt of what was happening. Like the New York Times had an editorial about what they called the staggering mass slaughter. Time magazine had a cover story on the boiling bloodbath, which at that time had taken 400,000 lives. And they all loved it. They thought it was incredible. You know, biggest victory in years. The big liberal Times columnist, James Reston, had a column called A Gleam of Light in Asia, describing the staggering mass slaughter and, U.S. News and World Report, hope where there once was none. I mean, everybody was just ecstatic. They had wiped out the one political party, the party that was defending the interests of the poor. They had undermined the threat to U.S. interests. Now, Indonesia was just open to be robbed with the cooperation of the ruling generals, and that's the way it's been ever since. Well, that's the background for the support for the Indonesian invasion. I kind of lost track and forgot what the original question was, so why don't you remind me? Yeah.
Racism.
Oh, racism. Yeah, well, sure, but, racism is always on top of something else. It's always on top of basically robbery. You have to make sure that the right people do the plundering, not the wrong people. And if you think that, I don't want to make this up, so let me quote. At the same time when John Foster Dulles was talking about the danger of Indonesia becoming, falling into the hands through a democratic election of a party defending the poor, he and Eisenhower had a private, President Eisenhower had a private conversation, still since declassified. The three of them, Eisenhower and the two Dulles brothers, remember one was Secretary of State, the other was head of the CIA, in which they were, Eisenhower was, sort of bewailing the, as he put it, the capacity of the communists to take over mass movements. And he said, that's a kind of an ability that we don't seem to be able to duplicate. And then the Dulles brothers explained how it works. He says, yes, he says, the communists appeal to the poor, and they are always trying to plunder the rich. And we can't do it. We can't get people lined up behind our line that the rich ought to plunder the poor. So it's kind of like a public relations problem. The poor are always trying to plunder the rich. And we got to try and stop them, And we can't seem to mobilize people that way, so therefore we have to use massacres. What else can we do? It's kind of like in self-defense. There's nothing new about this in American history. You can go right back to the Federalist Papers and read it. James Madison in the Federalist Papers, Federalist 10, the famous Federalist Paper, were actually in the debates in the Constitutional Convention leading to it, they're even more revealing, says that the primary role of government must be to protect property owners from the mass of property from the mass of the population. That's the primary role of government. And in one form or another, that's the guiding interest. Now the problem is to keep the poor from plundering the rich. And that does often take massacre. Race is an overlay, and it's not insignificant. But I don't think it's the main issue. We're pretty colorblind on who we massacre if they're trying to plunder the wrong people. In Indonesia, vast gains. U.S. corporations. American corporations and other foreign corporations are robbing Indonesia blind. Furthermore, they are moving production facilities to Indonesia where they can get workers at a fraction of the cost of American workers, meaning they can increase, the concentration of wealth here. I mean, these are tremendous gains. I don't know exactly what number to put on them, but they're certainly substantial. I mean, look, the last APEC conference, The Asia Pacific Economic Conference was in Jakarta last time, and if you remember, this was last November, I think. Clinton went there, and he came back with a big triumph, big headlines about, Clinton gets jobs for Americans, and then you read, terrific, he got jobs for Americans. How did he get jobs for Americans? He managed to get a 35 or 40 billion dollar contract for Exxon to develop a natural gas field in Indonesia, and to provide power for Indonesia and so on. And in fact, if you looked, Exxon stock shot up right after that because investors were so happy about all the new jobs for Americans. That's going to give lots of new jobs for Americans when Exxon develops an oil field off Indonesia. In fact, it will give jobs for some executives and lawyers and bureaucrats, and maybe a few skilled people will go out there, but it'll give what's called jobs for Americans. There's a word that you're not allowed to say. If you haven't learned this yet, you should. It's called profits. That's unpronounceable, or rather it's pronounced jobs. So the way the article after article talks about jobs for Americans, and it invariably turns out that it's profits for some Americans, like this case. But that's the kind of contribution that is very significant. You got to get jobs for Americans after all. So yeah, happen may take away jobs from Americans, but that's a different story. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, I mean, they're all over the place. Say Nike, which is one, which shifted facilities there for, sneakers or whatever the stuff, like running shoes and that kind of thing. But, they're all over the place. As I said, right now, right in Timor, there are American corporations drilling in the Timor Gap. Phillips is the one I know about. The only reason I know about it is that a reporter in Oklahoma has leaked out some of the stories.
Timor Action Network is currently considering is to begin a corporate campaign that would target certain corporations that are particularly benefiting from East Timor.
Well, he was asking what's known about the U.S. complicity in the massacre in 1965. Some things are known. Actually, I review it in that same chapter. What is known is that the U.S. secretly applauded it. They approved of it and applauded it. And there is plenty of cable traffic up and back between Washington and the U.S. Embassy in Jakarta saying we ought to support it in every way possible. So they did whatever they could to support it. Now, there's an open question as to the extent to which the U.S. was involved in the planning of it. There is some evidence of direct complicity. It is known that the U.S. Embassy and the CIA, you can't really distinguish them, did give lists to the Indonesian generals of people to be killed, but the Indonesian generals respond, and they may be right, that they didn't need any lists from the United States. So it's not clear, although that happened, it's not clear how important that was. To what extent was the United States actually involved in the planning? Well, nobody knows. One of the very good historian has done a lot of work on this, Gabriel Kalko, points out that there's a gap in the records. The released records stop in that period. There's some before, there's some after, and none there. As I said, real records are just coming out about the 50s. That's 7 years earlier. There's a new book just coming out, which you might want to look at, by George Kahan and Audrey Kahan, his wife, who's leading Indonesia, Southeast Asia scholars, coming out with the new press in a couple of months, which is about U.S. involvement. This is based on newly released documents and so on. Kahan has done some of the basic work on Indonesia and Southeast Asia. He's sort of one of the founders of the field. It's a book on U.S. complicity in an uprising in 1958. There was an uprising in the outer islands in Indonesia, which was designed to overthrow the government, and the U.S. certainly supported it, but the extent to which they supported it is just coming out. To the extent of using Philippine bases and Singapore bases and planes from Taiwan. We're big boys. There's big operations going. That's a book I'd really suggest looking at. On the other hand, the background for 65 is still under a cloud, so you can only speculate from bits and pieces of information.